So I know we just recently were in the season of Halloween, but do you remember as kids, you remember that one time in the church where you're like, if you go into the bathroom and you lock the door and turn the lights off and you say Bloody Mary three times, you'll see Bloody Mary in the mirror? Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah. That always like freaked me out. I remember like doing that at home and at church, like with friends. Like, when was the first time you remember like doing that? I remember it was pretty early on for me.
I only ever did it that one time, and it was with you because you were like, let's do it. And I, like, by like the second time, I was like, oh, and I shot out of there. You were like, but you have to lock the door. That's the thing, because if you don't lock the door, then you're not going to see nothing. And I was just like, wow, dude, that's wild.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think it was like some kid that I knew in Germany. We were at their house, and I think it was their sister that was like, yeah, we're going to do Bloody Mary. And it's like, if you say it three times, it's like, they're going to, and you have to, it's always like in the mirror. You have to be like looking in the mirror. That's when they're going to come at you. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I remember when you were a kid, you'd be thinking all that stuff is real. You think all that's going to actually happen. For sure, for sure.
I was going to ask you, did you quote-unquote see anything in the mirror or no?
No, I never did, but like, I remember getting to three and, I don't know, any sort of noise, any sort of whatever would like make you real scared. I don't know. I never saw it.
Well, that's what gets me about these ghost hunter shows. It's like, oh, that just... And it's like, all it could be is just the lights turned off and somebody moving stuff out of the shot or somebody whispering or whatever it is. It's like, how can you really believe that that's...
Yeah, I think a lot of that stuff is staged. Like, I think there are supernatural things, but I don't think that they are as prominent as they show in, like, TV shows and stuff like that. And I don't think they're, like, little sensors that are like, oh, the air got colder, so that's... You know what I mean? Like, I think that all is just crazy.
Yeah, you can make all that stuff up. I'm Chris.
And I'm Micah.
And this is the Donut Box Podcast. Well, buddy, we are officially in November. Can you believe that, dude? We only have, after this episode, two more episodes until we're entering into season four.
That's crazy. It's crazy that we're almost to 3 years straight of recording and having, you know, 3 years straight of doing it week after week. That's pretty wild, but here we are, and we're on to another free flow episode, which I always love these, man. And I don't know, man, I'm a little excited about today because there's plenty to talk about, but we're going to talk about toxic work environments and listing out, what would you say, I would like to call it, at least on my end, the Mount Rushmore's of toxic work environments, at least in my...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Some of them I can't say, but I think we both are going to agree together collectively that Boot Corral is on there, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I'll let you get started with what you want to introduce.
Chris, I'll say this. He hasn't had as many jobs as me. There was a period of time where I kind of bounced around from some jobs and kind of floated around. I would say probably one of the... So I've seen all sorts of different kinds of brands of toxicity, I guess, if you will, in the fact of, like, you know, there, you've been in an environment with a bunch of old heads who are like, you know what, here's what it means to work, here's what it means to do these things, and if you don't live up to the standard, like, for instance, it's like, oh, yeah, you got to be here 30 minutes early, and we sit here and we drink coffee, and then we go out there and work 12 hours, sometimes 16 hours. And it's like, and that's what it is. And you don't call out sick. And it's like a whole thing. And it's like attendance is very key. And you even pick up shifts and stuff like that. All the way to the other front of, you know, it's like, I've even been into the job fronts where it's like, hey, man, you're going to mess up what we have. So don't do what you're supposed to do so that you don't mess up what's going to be happening.
Our chill lifestyle, is that what you're saying? Like, it's so chill, we don't do anything around here. Don't work too hard or you're going to mess it up for the rest of us.
Pretty much, like, don't screw things up, because it's like we're trying to maintain our chill habitation here. And it's like, so I've seen all fronts of the spectrum, but starting at the beginning of the spectrum, I think probably one of the most toxic jobs besides Boot Corral for myself was I worked for a company called ASIG, and like ASIG, and it was as a refueler at the Austin airport. And that company has gone through, I think, like 9 or 10 like rebrands or whatever by this point. But anyways, so it was a so coming from Lubbock, Texas, because that's where I initially was coming from, and coming down there, it was actually paying kind of good. It was paying $12 an hour, and for Lubbock, Texas, that was pretty good wage, I would say. Would you say like $12 starting out is pretty good?
Yes, back like 12 to 13 years ago, that was really good.
And they were like really confused because they were like, "Are you sure? Like that's a really low number for here and stuff like that." And I was just like, "Nah," but I didn't realize for Austin area that was a little bit of a low number. But I live kind of outside of the area, so I thought no problem. And not to mention they were like, "We need somebody on like the really early morning shift," and so I was like, "Okay, yeah, I'll get on the other morning shift." And I'll never forget my boss's name. His last name was Sweatman, like legit. His last name was Sweatman, and he like literally he pushed everything through. He wanted to make sure, like, oh yeah, I got out there as quickly as possible because they were really short staffed. And they were like, pretty much what's going to have happen is we're going to assign overtime whenever whenever we need to. So basically, you like come in a day and be like, yep, you're working 16 hours. Their standard shift was 12. It's like, but if they needed you to work more, then it would be 16 hours. And so, what bothered me about this was if you were on the, they didn't really require this out of the late shift, like the 2 p.m. shift, the people that came in on at 2 p.m. Because our shift would start at like 3 in the morning, right? And we would go until 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and then our replacements would come on. But the people that came in on 2 in the afternoon or 3 in the afternoon, say they worked like a 16-hour shift, or like they would basically for them that would require them to come early. Well, the next day they would get to sleep in or whatever, right? And not have to get up at and they would go in at 2 in the afternoon. When I would have to turn around and get back up. And think about it, if you got to be there at 3 in the morning, you got to be leaving your house at like 2. So it was already rough schedule wise, because if you've ever had a job like that, you have to go to bed at like 5, 6 in the afternoon. It's kind of weird. Like everybody's having dinner, like having a good time, and you're having to go to bed already. And so, anyways, the job wise, what made it so toxic was they were really cheap, first of all, and it was the summertime, and they wouldn't provide us water, like on their own, which I'm pretty sure is illegal. I'm sure, like.
I'm pretty sure that's illegal. Do you have, if you're working out in the heat or working outside, like I for extended periods of time, I think they have to provide water for you. Did they make, and I guarantee they didn't make sure you took your regulated breaks.
Break, what was that? Like pretty much what how the it was a sweatshop kind of work environment. That's what made it part so bad. So like I kid you not, the process to get trained and everything and to get your licenses and stuff like that from the airport and get your background check and all that stuff was 2 weeks. And so in those 2 weeks they just pack all this training, but by the time the 2 weeks are over with, like you're in a fuel truck on your own, driving in between plane wings, like fueling planes. Like that's how quick the turnaround is.
Always one of the number one signs of a toxic workplace is if they have a quick training or if they're like, hey, we'll hire you on the spot. That's always kind of a red flag. But continue.
And I mean, after me, that's what they were did a lot too, is they did a lot of like hiring events where it was just like, I don't really care, can you get here kind of thing, and can you train? Like that's really the only requirements. It's like, can you do basic math and can you train and can you pass a drug test? It's like that's pretty much all that it took. And so, I was going through a lot of this stuff, and I remember there was quite a few days that I was quite dehydrated, because I mean this is summertime in Texas. This was August, and not having water. Like, I brought my own water, but like a lot of times it wasn't enough. Like, I remember there was one time, like, I even had to, I was out there on the tarmac, and how you fuel is there's these big, like, I'm sure you've seen on TV shows and stuff, they're these big nozzles pretty much, and they have two handles on them and a giant hose that goes down to the truck. And most of the time, you where the fuel is underneath the wing, and so you have to set up a ladder most of the time, and you have to climb up this ladder. And I mean, don't get me wrong, this thing is 40, 50 pounds, which most of the time is not a big deal. You just hoist that thing up there, you lift it up there and whatnot. But when you've been doing this all day and this is your 20th plane or whatever, and you know, it's really, really hot and whatnot, and you're dehydrated as all get out. Like, I remember there was one time, like, my muscles just weren't having it. Like, I was trying to lift it up there, and like, I could not get the nozzle to the point. I had to call somebody to come over there and help me lift it up there, 'cause like my muscles were just gived out. Like, I mean, it was just bad. And so I remember having a lot of that. I remember even coming home like a few times and like getting like sick because of the heat, and like trying to, it was one of those things, like, I try to call out the next day of like, hey man, I got too hot yesterday and like I'm really just messed up. And they're just like, no, we need you. We need you. We need you. We need you. And it's like, you don't want to quit on your team, do you? You know, and it was stuff like that. It was like, you don't want to,
Which
it's
is
like,
sign number two. Anytime they say, oh, they make you feel bad, or they're like, oh, well, you're quitting on your team, or you're quitting on your family. Whenever they use the word family, that's how you know it's toxic. Continue.
and not just that, but they would like use names. They'd be like, oh yeah, well, so and so is gonna have to cover all of your stuff if you don't come in. And that means he's gonna have to work a 16-hour day. And bro, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. If it means other people gotta work, well, that means I'm gonna suck it up and I'm gonna get in there and work my share. And so I end up still going. And so, anyways, I keep working, bro. And so we get through the first week. They paid monthly, so like they paid monthly, which also sucked.
Ooh, that's horrible.
Yeah, that really sucked. And so. But the first month's check came in, and granted, you also have to think. So I just moved. I get this job. I've been working about 3 weeks at this point, so it's not quite a month's paycheck, but I need to pay my rent for my first month, and the check bounces. Like, the check bounces,
Ooh,
like,
that's
straight
bad
away.
too.
And so I was like, what the heck, bro? So I went through this whole thing. Finally, they got me a check that cleared, but at this point, like, I was late, and so I had this whole battle with my apartment complex to like take out the fees and the fines, because it really wasn't my fault. Like, it was more the job's fault. And it was just like a really bad situation. And not just that, but again, once they finally got me in a truck and everything, they put me on the Southwest Airlines route at Austin, which is one of the busiest out there. And so it's really basically what it. So part of the problem too was Austin was built, like, the Austin airport was built in an old Air Force base. Most modern airports have little ports in the ground with like a little cart that basically, you know, you can fuel from the little port in the ground, and they have big fuel systems and stuff like that, the big modern airports. And then even, you know, some of the smaller airports that have like fuel trucks, it's not as far of a drive. But Austin, basically, it had only one place where you could go get all the fuel for your fuel trucks, and it was like 3/4 of a mile away. And so you'd have to go 3/4 of a mile away and come back. And so basically, how it worked was, it was kind of on you in your truck of, okay, you have to, you know, kind of say, okay, here's how much fuel I have left. I need to go while I have a lull between this flight and this flight to go refuel or whatever. And I mean, there's been times where it's like, man, I'm really hoofing it, because you're like, man, my truck's tapped out. The next flight's literally pulling into the gate right now, but I got to go back. I got to go drive all the way over here and, you know, fill the truck back up. Like, it was pretty stressful, especially because, like, I think I was 20 at the time. And driving a 10,000 gallon truck, like, that was, I don't know, it was pretty crazy. And so it just got to be too much, to where it was like, man, the heat, I'm not getting any water, like, I'm working my tail off. And like, and so it gets to be, around that second month time frame of like, because I remember that second paycheck was coming up because I really, really needed that second paycheck. Of course, when you're getting paid monthly, you're like really looking for that check once it's coming. And so I remember that check was supposed to come in, and again, the check bounced because like I got like the physical paper check, and again, the check bounced. And I remember being like, man, this ain't worth it. Like, I'm literally killing myself. Like, I'm working 16-hour days, 3 days a week. Like, it's super hot out here. Like, I'm not getting any water. Like, I feel like I'm dying almost sometimes. Like, I remember my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, she called me a Holocaust victim at one point because she said I looked so bad that was going on. It was just like, all right. And so I remember the day I decided, okay, I'm going to quit, it was because I was like, I came into work and looked at the schedule and it was like, okay, it's just the regular 12-hour day. So I worked a 12-hour day and somebody called in over the radio, like right at the end of my shift, and was just like, yeah, I'm gonna need you to stay like 16 hours and like you're the rest of the overtime shift. And like, I did not have it in me, dude. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. So I did not say anything back to him. And I drove my truck back and everything. And I was just like, yeah, I'm going to leave and pretend like I didn't hear that. Like, I'm literally just going to pretend I didn't hear that, because they did have coverage. It was just one of those things of like, nah, we need you to stay and do this. I was like, yeah, I don't think so. And so I end up leaving. And they tried calling me. And they didn't get me. So you know who they tried calling? They tried to call my emergency contacts. Like, so they called my wife, who was, you know, my girlfriend at the time. She was at class in the university at the time. And she had to, like, step out and, like, take the call. They're like, where's he at? He was supposed to work his, like, overtime shift and all this other stuff. And it's just like, bro, why are you calling his emergency contact? Like, it was wild, dude. It was crazy. Like, they were really, really desperate over a shift. And so at that point, I was just like, nah, bro, like, y'all are crazy. I can't be dealing with all this stuff. And it's like, and the checks are bouncing. Because, like, at this point, I was still in dispute with them trying to get a correct check. So it's like, why am I working 16 hours for you, too? I'm like, that was not. So it was a whole thing. And so when I decided to quit, I went into Mr. Sweatman's office. And I told him, I said, hey, like, this is not working for me. The second check bounced. Like, I'm really tired of fighting with this whole payroll deal. I don't know what's going on. And he's like, well, you knew what you signed up for. You knew what you signed up for with the overtime and the 16-hour shifts and things. It's like, I asked you if you wanted to work overtime. And I said, yeah. I said I'd be willing to work a little bit of overtime. But at the same time, I'm not willing to work and not know about it. It's like, I got plans. I got other things going on, especially when you're talking about 12-hour shifts. And to this point, I've already, like, I think I'd worked like 3 or 4 16-hour days in a row to that point. And I'm like, I don't have it in me. Like, I didn't have it in me. It's just like, you didn't tell me until the very end at all. So it's just like, I was out. It's just not going to work. And so I told him, like, yeah, I'm out and I'm done. And like, basically he was just like, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Because this really puts me in a bind. This really puts me in a bind. And it really costs us a lot to put you through training and everything. And just like, really put it on me. And I was just like, yeah, well, sorry about that.
What's wild to me is that people don't realize, like, actually the less you work your people, the longer they'll stay and the more productivity you'll get out of them. But yeah, I've seen all these memes where it's like, you're in a job interview and they're like, are you an all-star? Cause I only have all-stars on my team. They make it like, it's like, this is the biggest thing in the world. It's like, if you don't got what it takes, it's like, dude, I'm working at Walmart. Like, come on. Like, they take their jobs really, really seriously. And then whenever you quit on them, then of course they throw like a hissy fit. And I'm like, that's bad management and bad leadership. And so anytime you're overworking your people, yes, there are going to be seasons where you have to overwork a little bit, but when you're honestly overworking your people, you're not going to get any productivity out of them. Think about it. Like, when your engine's running hot in the car, like, it's not going to go as fast as if it just chills. Like, you chill, cool it down, like, give it some time to rest, and it'll work faster and better for you.
Yeah, it was, and a lot of it was mismanagement because it was, what it was he knew that he was like, you know what, if I get less people and I work them more time, then that means that I can have less of a, you know, I could take more of the budget and do whatever with it, right? And so really and truly what it came down to was they could have had more people. They didn't have to run the people that they had so hard. But the kind of sad part about that job was a lot of the people who worked there, it was kind of like you had people like myself who came and went pretty fast. And then you had the other people who had been there for 20, 30 years who had seen it change hands like 40 times. And like they were literally, you would sit down with them and they'd be like, yep, I remember back when it was this company. And it was just like, oh, you were there back then? It's like, oh, yeah. And like it's like changed 40 times, you know? And they've just been there the entire time. They were even there when the airport was at its old location, you know, kind of crap. And it's just kind of weird because there's both ends of the spectrum about that. And I don't know, just kind of interesting how all that goes. But yeah, I would say I would probably say that was number two in toxicity. Like the coworkers that I had weren't bad. It was more the management. The management was just really, they were slave drivers for sure.
Very interesting. So mine would probably be, it doesn't even make my Mount Rushmore, but when I worked for Charles Entertainment Cheese, the only thing that was toxic about it was they did overwork me when I was 16 years old. So they would basically put me in the game room all by myself. And then on the weekends, they would only have two closing game room attendants. And it was a big place. And so for them to do all that, like, I wouldn't get out until, like, super late on the weeknights. Like, there were times where I wouldn't get out till, like, 1 or 2 in the morning. Like on a Friday night or a Saturday night. And I don't know why my parents, allowed me to keep working that job, but I was raised to, you know, don't be a quitter. And so then I knew that my junior year was coming up. And so I was like, oh man, everyone's telling me junior year is going to be hard. There's no way I can keep my grades up and work at the same time. And so, cause my grades, they didn't slip terribly, but I do know they were slipping a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. It went from all A's to A's and B's. I'm joking.
Yeah. Whatever. I wasn't trying as hard is what I'm saying. But I would say, and this will probably take up a good one, but probably the most toxic place I've worked for is Boot Corral, for sure. Boot Corral is probably the most toxic place I've ever worked for, only because we've talked about it several times, but we talked about how the manager was just a straight up narcissist, would play favorites. Again, it was one of those like, oh, well, you're not selling good enough. Like, there's a problem with you. And so we talked a little bit about that. But Micah, do you want to kind of go a little bit deeper into why that place was so toxic?
Yeah. Yeah. So it, of course, a lot of things go from the top down. Right. And so you definitely have this happen from the top down, and you had the main leader there. What did we call him before? I don't even remember.
We'll call him Jim.
Jim, yeah, okay. And then you had his, little second hand right hand mate, old Scott, is what we'll call him, and tall stream being of a fella, and you know. At first, I remember, so I guess we can kind of take it back, at least from me, when I first got the job. So when I first got the job, everything seemed okay. It seemed like, okay, everybody seems all right. But then again, I was just kind of playing football, and then after practice or whatever, then I would come by and I would tag all the tags that had already been printed out and put them in merchandise and then put the merchandise out. So, you know, you're seeing some of it, but you're not seeing a lot of it. The only thing that I saw was like, okay, there might be something with one of the female assistants and the main guy there, old Jim. Like, that was the only thing that was like, okay, maybe that's going on. But it really wasn't until, so Chris gets the job there, and we were working with somebody else. And I think where it started becoming really toxic was, so we had that first receiver that was there. old Mudflap, and she, I don't know, man. It was like there was, I just remember at that point there was a lot of work with not a lot of with not a lot of freedoms there, where she would kind of hang out, and that's where I kind of started seeing it, where it was like it was more okay for certain people to hang out and have a good time versus, you know, us who are labeled the workhorses. And, you know, now I don't know. Did you kind of feel that way, at least?
Because it was one of those type deals. And that was one of his sayings.
One of them type deals.
It was one of those type deals where it was like, if you don't get your work done, because we worked Monday through Friday, and it was usually 9 to 4 or 9 to 5. And it was like, if you don't get all your work done during the week, you're going to have to come in on Saturdays. Well, I didn't know until I started learning how to receive the freight and stuff and how to print the tags. I didn't know that this particular boss was dragging the work out on purpose so that they could ride the clock. And so I just thought, oh, man, every day is going to be like this, because when I first started, I was working 12-hour days. I was working from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., dude. Like, it was nuts. And so it wasn't until I started learning how to do that I was like, oh, this is dragged out. And so the expectation we thought was, if you don't finish your work, you literally have to come in on a Saturday and finish it. And I was like, oh, okay. So I remember me and Micah showed up, and we missed a Texas Tech game to come in and work. And I remember that boss, Mudflap, didn't come in because of some family, whatever, and she didn't get in trouble.
It was like some family party or barbecue or something like that.
Yeah, and she didn't get in trouble. And I was like, why is this person not getting in trouble? And she would always go and walk and talk with all the other people. We were made to just do all the work. And I was just like, what the heck? Why is this person not getting in trouble? But then if someone else would go and talk and hang out with people, they would get in trouble. So it was always about, like, favorites. It just all depended on who Jim's favorite was.
So kind of started seeing that there, and then so some time progressed, and so I end up getting promoted and go out onto the sales floor, and that's where I really started seeing a lot of the toxic behavior coming out. So I think really a lot of sales environments, I see why they have commission-based sales environments like car dealerships, like these places. I see why they have them, but at the same time, it does breed a lot of room for being toxic. And so, of course, this manager, Jim, he was very much, it was about the bottom line. It was about profits just like anything else, but it was about who was the number one salesman? Who was getting the best sales? It was constantly, I mean, I remember there being so many times being in sales. It was not just like number one all time for that pay period or whatever. It was like number one daily. Like, it was a big thing of you got attaboys the next day. Because typically, unless it was the holiday season, old Jim's not staying past 5, 6 o'clock. Like, he's out, but it's like the next day, if you come in and you were the number one salesman the day before, like, typically you got attaboys and stuff like that. And so, of course, that's always where you want to be, right, with your boss. You want to be in good standing with your boss, but it was one of those things, it was quite finicky. And when you're always chasing that feeling, it's always, you know, it's really, really hard. Not just that, but sometimes being number one is not even good enough. That's not good enough. It's like, there would be some times where, there'd be things called the house numbers, which we've talked about this in the past before, but that's basically all these sales that are happening that no salesman's name is attached to. So they're not getting the commission for it. So it's all going, to house with no commission. And that's a frowned upon thing, because technically, in their minds, they're thinking no salesman has talked to them or helped them, so they're not getting the best customer service experience, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, if those numbers were high, man, would that be used against you, like, a ton? It would be...
I was going to say, let me give you an example of how he would try to do this. So, say example, if you sold $20,000 worth of merchandise in a day, which that's a lot, that's kind of unheard of, right? If you sold $20,000 worth of merchandise in a day, and then for example, the house sold, I don't know, 10,000, right? Like it not even beat you. He would come up to you the next day and be like, "Well, I guess you don't want to be a salesman anymore." And you're like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Well, I hired salesmen. Like, I want winners. I want salespeople. I guess you don't know how to be a salesman. I guess I got to teach you how to be a salesman." It's like, "What are you talking about?" It's like, "You only sold $20,000 yesterday." It's like, "Wow, that's really good." It's like, "No, that's not good. The house sold 10. You should have sold 30." And it's like, "Dang, like you're it was constant like putting you down to make you feel
Yeah,
bad."
and it was constant like, okay, you need to be working harder, you need to be working harder and that sort of thing. And what was also hard about that was there were also rules, right? And it was interesting because it was like the rules were followed, but they were also broken all the time. But we had rules between other salesmen. Basically, whenever a customer would walk in the door, it was kind of we called it the up list, like literally who's next up on the list kind of deal. And you would keep track amongst yourselves unless you were a jerk. And there were those people out there that just took people who, they didn't care. But most of the time, people followed the flow and the order. And so the hard part is, things happen too where you're helping people, you're helping two, three people, say it's busy and stuff like that. And somebody's like, okay, like people don't know you're working on commission. Like people don't know, like, oh yeah, the salesman needs to walk up there with me with the stuff in order for them to get credit for it. And sometimes, like the hard part too as a salesman was, in order to get credit for it, we had these little cards and they had little barcodes on them and whatnot. And so typically you go, okay, you're gonna take this stuff. Well, let me take it to the front for you. So you take it to the front, you put your little card on there, and ba-boom, that's how you get your credit. But sometimes how it would work, one, you'd have people be like, no, that's okay. Like I'll carry it, or I'm still deciding on what I'm looking for, that sort of thing. And say they decide while you're waiting on, working with somebody else, they could just book it right up to the front and pay, and that's what's going to house, right? Yeah, you help them the entire time. And I remember there was like a whole debacle at one point because sometimes if you see that sort of thing happen, if you know the cashier, you can like flag them down and say like, yeah, that's me. And yet like they'll punch in your number and like it's a whole thing. But I remember that being a whole thing. But it wasn't like it was this easy thing, and it wasn't like there was a lot of times where we're just like letting people go because we're being lazy. A lot of times these house numbers was because we're running between a lot of different people. Either that or what would really aggravate me too, I don't know if this ever happened to you, and one of the biggest reasons I didn't become a manager, and not like I still didn't have to do it, but I was always made to put out like sales promotions, like these sales promotions, like, okay, we're having a Labor Day sale or we're having whatever. So we need to change the prices on all these things, all the tags on all these things, find these different styles on the racks and change the tags on them or put like sales stickers on there. And you have to do this while you're selling. Like you have to do this while you're selling. Like you don't get to just like, okay, I get to do this little side task and whatever. Like you're not making any money doing this side task. So you're having to sell and do that. And so you're having to not only balance all these things, but you have this boss who's telling you like, hey, you're not doing good enough because the numbers are so high and things like that, and you should be selling more.
And he was the one that would make you do the side task.
Exactly. He'd be making you do the side task, either that or like, there'd be some sporadic random times too. Like, and really and truly, what it would be power trips, but there'd be some sporadic times. Like, some of the things, one of the sections that I had for a while was boots, like men's boots. And what he would do is he would go, yeah, I bet your section isn't good. Like, that you always didn't want to have him catch you standing still. Like that was the thing too. Like it didn't matter if the store was so slow and like everything is fine, and you're like, I'm not making any money, why should I be doing anything? No. You always want to be moving or screwing around or like trying to make it look like you're doing something, because if he walks up to you And it would always pain me when, like, these rookies would be standing around, like, new salesmen, they'd be standing around, and this guy, Jim, would come over, they'd be like, I bet your section isn't done. And he'd be like, oh, yeah, it is. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, let's go find out. And it's like, oh, great. And because it's not just going to be his, it's going to be everybody else's, too. And basically what he would do is he would dump boots into the floor that weren't in the right place and make you clean them up. And so it's like, if your section wasn't good too, like, you're about to get it. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, you're more veteran than this. You should be showing these guys as an example of how to do things and, like, all this other stuff. Like, man, it was one of those things of, like, you didn't want to be caught slipping either. Like, you don't want to be caught slipping even on some dumb stuff.
It was also kind of going back to the airport job that Micah was talking about, like, Christmas and Thanksgiving, you could just forget about it because you couldn't take any time off. And so there would be a lot of college kids who'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas. And, like, I got sucked into it because I was like, oh, yeah, no, you're not. I haven't gone home in this amount of time to go see my mom or my dad for Thanksgiving or Christmas. And it was like, oh, yeah, like, if you're really here and you want it, you're going to be here for Thanksgiving and Christmas because those are the prime opportunities to make money. But, like, I understood why the stalkers had to be back there to help, like, put product out and to help, like, re-tag stuff. But at the same time, I remember, like, Black Friday was a huge, huge thing, of course, as it is for any retail thing. But it was like, yeah, you don't take this time off. And we really don't care about your family. Like, I remember taking time off for anything, like, you better not even ask.
It was not fun at all. I remember we would get Thanksgiving Day off, but Black Friday we would not. And then Christmas, we were open pretty much every day besides Christmas Day. And it was pretty bad. And I don't know, man. You're right. It was one of those things. It's like, if you want to take off, you're not dedicated. You must not want to make money. Like, you must not want to move up in this company. And, you know, Chris and I, we've talked about this on the side before, but I think where a lot of us got sucked in too was this manager, Jim. And here's another bit of toxicity as well, is the promises to move up and then kind of dangling carrots in front of people's face. Because, like, he did that to both of us, and I know he's done that to a few other people that I know of as well, to where it's like, you know, I remember him telling us, like, you could be the youngest manager in Boot Corral history. Like, you could be the youngest manager. Like, they're talking about giving you their own store and all this. And, I mean, you believe them because it's like, yeah, I went to these boot camps and, like, met the family and, like, you know, was in with them and stuff like that. So there's a likelihood, oh, man, you know, I could be the youngest manager of a store. And, you know, even though you have hopes and dreams, you're sitting here like, well, I didn't expect something like this to come this fast. And, you know, managers, not knowing any better, right, at 19, 20 years old, you're like, managers are doing pretty good for themselves. They're able to provide for their family and, you know, stuff like that. I can see myself in that position, especially being the youngest one ever. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was always one of those things where, like, wherever I went, I always somehow just got put in manager roles. And so I did take the assistant manager job. And I remember, like, I didn't have that job for long. Maybe it was like 3 weeks before I was like, yeah, like, I got to get out of here because there was stuff going on in my personal life that was like, yeah, like, this is just a bad environment for me if I really want to do the right thing and I really want to be on the good path. And so I remember, like, my first mistake was telling Deputy Porkers, and then, of course, Deputy Porkers told everybody that I was going to quit. So then I remember going into the office and being like, okay, like, I'm going to tell him that I'm quitting. It's like, I'll put my 2 weeks in. And I remember him, like, being like, well, he's like, are you going to quit on me tonight or what? And I remember, like, I had an hour-long conversation, and he did a lot of that thing of, well, you're just, you know, throwing your life away. You could be the youngest manager in Boot Corral history, and, like, you know, there's all these things that you could do, and you're just throwing that away. And I don't understand why you're doing this. Like, this isn't the right thing to do. And I remember telling him, like, hey, like, in order for me to really follow my faith and, like, to be on the good path, like, I gotta leave this place. Like, I have to. Like, it's just not good for me to be around this type of environment. I remember him saying, like, he was like, if Jesus were here, he'd smack you upside the head and tell you that you'd make that you're making a mistake. And he also used the thing of like, well, I guess I'm going to have to stay and not be with my family tonight to help cover your shift because I was supposed to be the closing manager. And that's where I felt really, really bad, kind of like Michael was saying. And so I remember just sitting there thinking about it, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't quit. And I remember, like, thinking, like, oh, I feel so bad. Like, and I just told him, I was like, I'll work my 2 weeks. Like, I'll do all that. And he was like, no. He was like, if we're going to quit, just quit now. Here's the papers. He always threatened with termination papers. Always. That was a big thing. And I remember, like, heavily considering staying. And then I remember he was like, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And he was like, when I come back, you're going to decide whether or not you're going to sign this paper or not. And I remember as soon as he went to the bathroom, like, there are not that many times that I've heard the Lord clearly speak, like, almost audibly. But, and I know this sounds weird, but I heard the Lord say, like, what are you doing still sitting here? Like, it's time for you to go. Like, you need to get up and go. And, like, I was like, oh, yeah, I've already stayed here way too long. I remember just, like, signing the paper. I remember when he came back, he was like, so what's it going to be? And I was like, sorry, I got to leave. And, dude, this is when I was working at the overnight job, too. Like, after, because I had to go to my shift at the overnight job. Actually, no, I was actually off that night. And so I remember, like, once I signed the paper, I went home and I slept so good. Like, I slept and I woke up, and it was like the best sleep that I had had in a long time. Like, it was, I don't know what it was, but being out of that environment was like liberating, and like I felt free. I don't know if you felt that way whenever you walked out the door the second time, but
for sure. And I mean, one other part, and I'll tell how I left too, because of course it's a big part of it, but I think a big thing too, at least for me, he would always like relate you to other people. How do I put that? So like there was a dude who was like his number one salesman for a little bit, and like end up dating this girl that was there and like all this other stuff. And basically he would be like, yeah, that was my fallen star kind of thing. And he would like relate me to him all the time. He'd be like, yep, that's just how you're becoming. And, like, because, like, the dude had, like, got strung out on drugs and, like, all this other stuff. And I remember him being like, yep, that's how you're becoming, just like that guy. And it's just, like, and that kind of stuff, like, he knew what he was doing because it would make you mad to the point where you'd be like, no, I'm not. And it would, like, make you, I guess, more or less fall in line with what he wants you to do. But it was one of those things to where the lifestyle that he wanted you to live was, like, there's no way, because it was too contradictory. Like, it contradicted itself of what he wanted you to do.
My question is, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but my question is, do you think, and I felt this way, but I think maybe you probably felt more this way, but he was almost kind of like, or tried to be like a father figure, you know, kind of like, hey, I'm guiding you, and like, hey, like, you know, you're going to be like my prodigy. Like, he would build you up like that. And you're going to be like, he tried to give you fatherly wisdom. And you're like, man, like, it was almost like you're trying to chase the approval of your dad. And you're like, man, like, I want to do what this guy tells me to do, because like, I look up to him in some weird way.
Yeah, there was that. And like, even his like storyline, like the story that he had, like, he had a dream at one point of like doing something else, but like it ended up falling out for him because he had like a medical problem. And it was like, okay, so I went, and he was like scrubbing toilets for, you know, Boot Corral, and like worked his way from like scrubbing toilets all the way up to like having this, you know, and I don't know, for a 19, 20 year old, you're like, there's got to be some merit to that, right? Especially because in the environment that we grew up in, tell me if I'm wrong, Chris, but like hard work and dedication and working your way to the top, that was kind of the, it doesn't really matter what you did or like what level it was. It could be, you know, Papa John's doing pizza. Like, if you worked your way from being scrubbing the toilet to worked your way, like, that meant something. And that means you're doing something right. And so, I don't know, for me, it was like, okay, this guy's obviously doing something right. And again, he'd like, when I just met him, he was like building a house on the edge of town, right? Like a big, nice new house on the edge of town. Like he had two kids, like a wife. Everything seemed pretty cool. And I don't know. I don't know. It just it nothing ever seems crazy. Nothing ever seems bad about it at the moment, right? Nothing ever seems like, okay, this person's gonna be really controlling, and it doesn't ever seem that way, but it ended up being that way. I don't know. It that whole thing is just kind of a crazy experience because it's those people are that's what makes them so devious and what makes them so hard is because it's they make everything seem so innocent, right? I mean, there were so many times, kind of like Chris was saying too, there's been so many times in conversations that I had with this guy to where you do believe that it's you, right? It could be the most outlandish things that he's saying to you of like, oh yeah, well, you're not doing right because of this, this, and this, and you do believe that it's you because you're sitting here going, well, that's true. My sales would be better if I wasn't out here going on dates with so and so and so and so, and then you're sitting here going like, wait, why is this guy all up in my love life? Like, what does that matter about things? You know what I mean? Like, or you know, it was always just stuff like that, and you think that okay, he's out for my best interest because okay, he doesn't want me to fall into certain mistakes and wants me to be, he wants me to be, you know, the youngest manager or whatever. But like the end of the day, I remember the biggest thing that he would hold over or at least over my head was just like, yeah, if it came down to it, if they asked me today, I don't know if I could give that recommendation for you to be manager. Like, I don't know if I could do that because just the way that you act and like some of the things that you do. And like after a while, it was just like, you know, bro, I don't think you were ever going to give me the recommendation to begin with. If you know what I mean, like if you ever were, then again, knowing who he is, he probably would just because it's like if it actually if he could have the youngest manager come under from under his store, like he would definitely do that no matter who it is and what it is. But at the same time, I don't know. It's just a lot of the promises were just not true at all, and a lot of it was just it was a lot of what we got. It was weird because it paralleled a lot of what we got in church somewhat too, and what I got at home as well. There was a lot of those tendencies that came out, and I think that's why it was so easy to get sucked into it.
'Cause that's all you know. Like when you don't know any better, like you don't think, oh, like I should do better. You think that's normal. You think everyone is out for your best interest, and you are like, oh yeah, he's obviously trying to help guide me. Like what he's good. Like he's doing this out of the goodness of his heart. But you don't know what that.
Right, he doesn't have to help me
Yeah,
out.
it. You don't know at that age that like, oh yeah, not everybody has your best intentions at heart. Like he's just trying to manipulate you to do what he wants you to do, and then like you said, to your point, if I do succeed, then he wants to take the credit for that. And so you just it's hard, but I think that's some of the qualities that you recognize in toxic environments and workplace environments is number one, they expect you to make all of your life about the workplace when it's like, yes, you should care about what you do, but like you need to have work-life balance. Number two, when they say, oh yeah, well, work's your family. Anytime they say we're a family here, that means that they want you to sacrifice your family for something. And there are workplaces where people do genuinely are a family and they do get along, but it's not like a, oh yeah, well, you're letting your brother down. You should be spending time here instead of with your actual family. Like, and then, you know, also playing favorites, beating, like using mind games to try to get you to make yourself feel bad or to trap you into staying or make you think that there's nothing else better out there. 'Cause you're like, if I do leave, like what else is out there? Like I spent this time being here and what's going to happen if I leave? And I'm scared of the unknown and thinking about it, like, dude, this is just a local boot store in Lubbock, Texas, but it made it like it was like your world and it made it like it was everything. Like it was so important. I don't know why, like I cared about all of those things in that world. Like, it was like, man, make or break, and I don't know why.
Well, and it was like, and it was its own little world too. It was, we knew, and it's kind of like this now, but it's like we knew all the managers from all the different locations, and it's like, oh yeah, you remember this guy from over there, then I remember this guy. Like, for there for a while, I could talk to people like that. Like, it was its own little world of like, oh yeah, so-and-so was over at here, and then I heard that so-and-so got fired over here because of that, and it's like, oh yeah, that was guy was an idiot over there. And it's like, you knew where all the managers were, and that's literally why they would call it being a lifer, is because a lot of these guys had been there for such a long time and had been managers there for such a long time, and it really is like getting stuck in a rut and just staying there. And I think there's, for a little bit, there is something kind of lucrative about it, because I think where it gets you, or at least where it got me, was as a salesman, you make such good money for what you're doing. Like, for my age, I was making really good money, right? Like, I was making really good money, and you're thinking, oh man, slinging boots, that's not that big of a deal. And then you look at what the assistant managers are doing and you go, oh man, I'm pretty much helping them out with everything and they're selling. So they're pretty much doing the same thing that I'm doing. And then you look at what the general manager is doing. You're like, oh man, that's not that hard. I could do that stuff. Corporate's doing the ordering. We're not even having to order the stuff for the store, right? It's like, so it's like, I could do that too. And so you get to the point where you're like, oh man, I could see a clear path up. And I think a lot, especially in this day and age, and especially, I mean, it was a little less in that day and age, but how many clear paths to quote-unquote success were there, too, that you saw? Because, like, that was a pretty quick way up, isn't it? If you think about it, it's like...
Well, thinking about it, too, when you're all like, oh, yeah, I'm going to college, it's like, yeah, I can still go to college, but I also have... It's a guaranteed also path as well, because with other places, you're like, I'm not sure, how do I move up, and I think kind of to your point, like, you see these managers and, like, from your perspective, you're like, oh yeah, they've made it and they're doing great. They're making all this money. They get to be around Western wear and they get to party. They get to have fun still. Like, it's just one big party. But really, from the outside looking in, it's like a dead end career. Like, I hate to say that, like, no shame to people that are in that. If you love it, that's great. But like, a lot of those people in there, like, they just were like, well, this is all there's going to be for me in life, so...
Right, there's no other place up from there. Like, there's no other place... Like, really, the only betterment you can get, the only thing that's better is you can get a better store. Like, you know, it's like, okay, the brand new store that's getting opened up in the prime location, like, you have the chance of moving up to there if you want to. Like, that's kind of the next move, if there's anything. But I guess at age 19, you're like, oh man, like, there's no quick success, but man, this just a few years and you could be the manager of the store. But in reality, that's the way that it made it seem, but it's really not, because I've spoke to some folks and, you know, I hear about some things from Boot Corral and things. And a lot of the people who were assistant managers who I thought for sure would have had a store by now are still sitting in that same assistant manager spot. You know what I mean? And it's like, to this day, like, they're still there, sitting in the assistant manager spot, still having to do the same stuff, still don't have a store. And it's just like, man, that's a long time to be sitting and waiting to not have a store.
Well, you have to think, too, like, there's only so many stores, and, like, if they are lifers, like, the managers aren't going to move around that much. There's not going to be that much movement. So whenever there is a brand new store, and they're not building as many stores now as they used to, like, you're kind of stuck. You're in that spot. Like, kind of the same thing was happening when I worked for the grocery store. Like, back when I first started, it was that way. A lot of people were locked at the stores because, like, there wasn't a lot of movement. Then on the flip side of that, they started building all these stores, and now everyone is getting moved around, and, like, all the managers are really – it was really quick to get promoted up. Well, I say that, but, like, it was really hard for me just because I didn't play golf with the right people. But, like, there was a lot of movement and a lot of shuffling around. So a manager would probably be at a store for maybe 6 months. Like, it wasn't that unknown. Like, hey, you're now the store managers, they stayed for a lot longer. But Like if you're trying to get up to that store manager level, like you can move up pretty quick.
Absolutely, and I think you're probably right. It's probably because they haven't been building nearly as many storms as they or stores as they've had in the past, and so it's probably what it is. And I think a lot of it goes back to what you were talking about too, of it's that mind's eye of I'm sure a lot of these people, and again, no shade to these people because it's hard, but you know, if a lot of these guys have been doing this since they were 18, 19 years old. Right, and they come fresh out of high school. They were going to school, you know. Some of them even dropped out of school with the hopes of like, okay, I'm gonna make Boot Corral what I'm gonna do, you know. And then what do you do 10 years later? Still don't have a store, but Western Wear is all I know. And it's definitely in this day and age, I would say, in the areas that I'm talking about, there are only a few major brands. That's it. Like there are only a few major brands, and so this major brand that they're working for, it's like you don't also have too many places to go Western wear wise if you did want to leave that environment. So it's, I don't know, it's definitely difficult, and I'm glad that I'm out of that. And I think the final bit to this, and I guess we can move on, is it was very, because the top was so petty and so BS, the rest was like high school, man. The rest of our coworkers, it was like Gossip City. I mean, it was really crazy, and like people were sleeping around with each other, and like it was, I don't know, it was kind of the Wild West, but it sounded like high school. It
I
really
mean,
did.
in environments like that, man, like you're like people are bored, and that's what they do. Like when you're bored, you're gonna gossip about people, you're gonna, sleep around. Like that's what it is. That's also kind of a different, it's just a different mindset versus like, hey, like this is my career path, I'm moving forward. Like, yeah, you see some of that in the workplace, but like at the retail and like fast food level, like it's like, well, like this is just a job, so I'm just here. So while I'm here, I might as well make it interesting. There's probably a lot of mindsets for people, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But just to recap, the way that I left was I worked there twice, and the second time that I worked there, I was about sick and tired of it, and we were about to go through another holiday season. And so I remember we always had a meeting. It was an infamous meeting every year. It was the Black Friday meeting, and it was always after work. And so it would be 9 o'clock. They would shut the doors and count the cash, and then we would have this meeting. And I remember every year we would tell everybody, like, don't ask Jim any questions. Like, shut up. Like, everybody, shut up. You don't have any questions. For the love of God, if you want to ask questions, ask me afterwards, because I've been through a few of them. Like, ask other people, but don't ask him questions, because literally, we're all trying to go home, you know? And so, I'd had some ongoing issues. I'd actually bought my wife. Now, who is my girlfriend? I bought her a promise ring, and I had never bought anybody a promise ring. And this guy had basically told me, "Well, she's cheating on you, and you should know that." And like went in this whole speech about that whole thing, which I thought was BS, and I was pretty upset about that naturally. And so, he had said something about like, "Oh yeah, well, if you're questioning about coming back, you might as well just like not come to work tomorrow." So I didn't go to work that day. And I thought to myself, well, great. That means I don't have to go to this stupid meeting too. And, you know, I figured in that environment, because of a lot of the way that he talked about things, if you don't show up, I figured I was fired, right? Because he would say things like, well, if you're going to do that, you might as well not show up tomorrow. AKA like you're fired, right? So if I didn't show up, I thought I was fired. So he gives me a call like that evening and was like, "Hey, so you didn't show up for your shift today?" And I was like, "Nope, I didn't." And he was like, "Well, why don't you come to the meeting tonight and we'll talk about it?" And I was like, "Wait, like I'm not fired?" And he's like, "No, like it's fine. Like I obviously we have like this is the other part too." He would kind of play nice for a little bit and he'd be like, "Oh, you know, obviously we're having problems. And I just want to get some things straightened out because, you know, it's going to be a busy holiday season. I just want to get some things straightened out." And, you know, it would always give you this like false sense of, okay, maybe he's gonna play ball. Like maybe he's gonna play ball, like maybe everything's gonna be cool, right? And so I remember going up there and he always had this like infamous thing where he would be like he would call employees to his back office, and so he'd be like, Chris to the back or Biker to the back. And so the moment I walked in there, bro, like his office had these little blinds, and I remember watching him like look through those little blinds when I walked through the doors of that place, and he like called me to the back, and everybody like looked at me like, oh shoot, it's about to happen. I was like, yep. And so I went back there, and man, I got reamed about not showing up and how I didn't care about this place, and you know, all the typical stuff we've been talking about this entire time just reamed me. And you know, did the whole thing about like, you know what, if you want to sign paperwork, like we could do that right now and all this other stuff. And I was kind of like Chris, I was kind of in and out of it, like, man, because you're looking at the holiday season going, man, I'm about to give up on a lot of money, because that's what it is. Like, the holidays is where you make all your money. So it's like, man, do I really want to give up on all this money or and not, because basically the whole thing he was trying to tell me at the time was like, if I don't have a number one salesman in you, like you might as well quit, because like that's the whole reason I hired you for. That's what you should be doing this holiday season. It's like, if you're not in it with the heart of being a number one salesman, like, and at the time I was pretty burnt out to the point where I was like, you know, number one salesman or not, I really don't care. I'm just gonna sell what I'm gonna sell. And he's like, if you don't have the heart of being a number one salesman, like you should get out and whatnot. And so like I was honest with him, I was like, man, I don't know if I got all that in me and everything. And he's like, well, it's either you, it's like you commit through the new year or you sign paperwork and all this other stuff. And like he got into it. What really got me is when he got into it about me and my girlfriend, which is now my wife. And I remember calling my buddy who used to work there, good old Adrian, was like, hey man, like this is what's going on. I was like, I don't know if I should walk out right now. And he was just like, dude, you don't owe them nothing. Like, walk out of that place. And so I remember walking back in there and was like, all right, I'm gonna sign paperwork and I'm gonna leave. And he was like, oh yeah, you gotta do that? Come with me. And like he takes me in front of everybody that was sitting there for that little Black Friday meeting, and he announced in front of everybody. He was like, Micah decided he wants to sign paperwork and be a quitter and quit on all of us and quit on the whole team. And he goes, so I brought a whole stack of paperwork. If anybody else wants to follow him, you're more than welcome to. And I signed the paperwork in front of everybody, and I looked at him and I stuck my hand out and said, you know, thank you for all the opportunities you've ever given me and everything like that. He said, take a couple steps back. I took a couple steps back and he shut the door in my face and locked it and didn't even shake my hand. And I left. And I just remember everybody in the crowd looking shocked of like, oh man, he's actually quitting. It's like, yep, I'm actually quitting. And but no, I do understand what you mean about having a great night's sleep. And bro, my parental units were so mad that I quit that job. Like, I think between the toxic boss and them, oh my gosh, they were so mad I quit that job. Like, I couldn't, I literally got a job the next day. Like, I put out my resume the next day and got a call back the next day. Got an interview the next day, and they were like, yeah, we want you to start. Like, full on got a job that quickly, and they were still upset. They were like, can't believe you left that job.
Yeah, well, they had some other issues that they need to work
Oh,
out
for
with
sure.
God. So, quick rabbit hole, why specifically were they upset that you just quit the job? Was it the fact that you just quit, or was it did they have a reason?
So they were mad that I just quit, and they were mad because of the amount of money that I was making. They were like, "Oh, you were making such good money. Why did you quit and do that?" And I think part of the reason they were mad is because I was paying for my own college. Like I was paying for South Plains because of going there. And so I think that was part of the reason they were mad, but they were mad because they were like, "You had such good status, like you knew the owner's family, like and 'cause I don't know if I ever told you this, but they didn't really believe that I knew the owner's family and like worked with them until, you know, the whole owner's family is from the same area that like my grandfather was, right? And so like one of the family members knew the family and like ran my name across and was like, oh yeah, we know him, good kid, all this other stuff. And so like the whole family was like, oh yeah, y'all know him. Like he knows the owner's family. You know how prideful they could be. Like, oh yeah, he knows the owner's family and all this other stuff.
Yeah, they were like, oh well, well we raised such a great son. And they, again, they were, without getting into detail, they were just like old Jim, where it was like, oh yeah, you're successful.
Yeah,
we're gonna
pretty much
for that one. Yeah, that's a whole nother rabbit hole. I won't get into it. I'll keep my mouth shut.
No, I know it's hard not to get into, but pretty much, yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. It was just like, man, he knew that he. Why would you leave? You knew the family, like you were in with them good, like you could have moved forward with them. And it's just like, bro, I've got dreams and aspirations that are bigger than all that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, that wasn't the end all be all for me for sure. And they did not like that at all. Did not like that at all. Anyways, man, so we can move off of that one if you want. I've got another toxic work environment we could talk about if you want.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll do one last one and then we'll wrap it up.
I didn't realize that we could do multiple free flows about toxic work environments, but here we are. Man, I think I've told you about this before, but good old Papa John's Pizza. Bro, was that place toxic? Oh my gosh. Have you ever worked for a pizza place or anything like that besides Charles Entertainment Cheese?
No. I never made the pizza, nothing that. I've only ever worked for Charles Entertainment Cheese. The only mouse I'll ever work for.
Man, I'm telling you, you might not have worked for, you might have only worked for one mouse, but you've worked for a few rats. Anyways.
Yeah.
No, all I'm saying is, man, so number one, this is a sign of real being toxic. Papa John himself is not a very good person. What's his name? Old John, whatever. He, Schneider or whatever, he is not a good person. Like, the first sign of, you know, it's going to be toxic is the videos they show you in training. It's like all about his story, like over and over and over again. I remember they gave us a quiz of like, you have to answer at least 80% about his story and about how it started in like his, I don't know, his dad's whatever, his little pizzeria, and he sold his car and rebought his car and all this other crap. So like, my thing is, they like praise this guy, and I understand like it's named after him, but it's like, geez. And so it was constantly about him, right? And two, I'm glad that they went scientific with it, but really, why do the delivery drivers need to know about the scientific bits about the crust? They're like, that you would have to know and have to answer questions about what kind of yeast and what kind of molecular compound is in their dough in order to make it rise and all this other crap. And I'm just like, bro, I'm going to be a delivery driver. You think I care about what's going to be in the crust? But you had to like answer all these questions. The other part that made it really toxic was the manager who worked there. First of all, never trust a dude who's allergic to his job. Like, this dude was legitimately allergic to his job. When he was making the pizza, he would break out in hives because, you know, that powder when they're like tossing the pizza dough and stuff, that he was allergic to that. So literally he would break out into hives. And, but the other thing was, what's in common with all these managers was, bro, he was like, I don't know, I guess you know how they say drinking the Kool-Aid? This dude was drinking the pizza sauce. Like, this dude was straight up, like, Papa John's. He loved it. He's just like, you know what? If you work hard enough, you can work your way up to being a manager just like me. And he even had, like, displayed this whole thing. It was in the shape of a ladder. And it was just like the ladder to success. And it was just like, you could be the delivery driver to the whatever. And this dude, he had worked, because it was in a college town, this guy had worked through his college and just decided he got his degree. Like, he full on has his degree, but he just decided, nah, I'm just going to keep on working at Papa John's and be the manager. And so that's what he ended up doing. But he was like literally allergic to the darn thing. So he was like broken out in hives and swollen up all the time. And I remember, so he, the biggest part that was crazy about him was he would pick every single day who would do what jobs, right? And I remember, like, he would pick me to do, like, restocking the sodas, but he knew that I also was, like, good at doing the dishes. Like, the dude he would always choose to do the dishes would always make us stay late because when we would close at 12 a.m., and this dude would always take so long because, you know, like we'd be mopped, we'd have everything stocked up. This dude would have all the dishes pile up, and he would wait till the end of the night. But this manager would always put him on there. And so, like, I kept begging this dude. I was like, please, just put me on dishes. Like, if we're going to close, can you put me on dishes? Because, like, as they come out and as they're dirty, like, I'll wash them as it goes. Because he was also the kind of guy that would sit there and just, like, listen to his headphones the entire night and then let the work pile up. And then we're the ones having to suffer for it. And so I end up doing it one night, get it all done and everything. And everybody's like, wow, we're actually leaving on time and everything like that. Did he ever pick me to do dishes ever again? Nah, dude, he sure didn't. He picked this other guy. And I just, it was like stuff like that. And so, like, I confronted him one time and was just like, bro, like, why can't we, you know, if other people are more efficient at certain things, why shouldn't we do that? And he's like, I'm the manager, first of all, so I make the rules. And he's like, and two, he needs to learn how to be better at doing the dishes. That's why I keep giving him the opportunity to do that. And it's like, yeah, but you're not telling him, hey, you're being a problem and you need to do all the dishes first and foremost. Because, like, this manager would go home before the end of the night, so he's not over there standing and yelling at him and saying, hey, you need to get all this stuff done. I need to, like, work as you go. And so, like, he's not the one dealing with it. And, bro, I remember after that, he got, like, really mad. He's like, I'm tired of everybody questioning my authority. And, like, he got, like, super mad. It's just like, dude, it's just because we can outline the jobs a little better. We can do all this other stuff really better. But on top of all of that, man, there was a hurricane coming. And, you know, we live about 3 miles inland from the coast, which, you know, by the time things get to us, it's tropical storm, stuff like that. And so Hurricane Harvey was coming, and this town was right on the river. And so we were like, this guy was like, yeah, we're not going to close. Like, we're not going to close. And I remember all of us in the shop were like, dude, we're right next to the river. Like, it's going to flood out. Like, you probably need to close. And he's like, nah, we're not going to close. So the sheriff of the town comes by and says, hey, we're urging everybody in this area to close because it looks like it's going to be a lot of water and it's going to flood and everything. So we're going to need you to close. And he's like, nah, we're not going to close, but we're going to put up sandbags. And so I remember we were out there and he had the delivery drivers in the back alley. There was like gravel back there, which, by the way, doesn't work very good for sandbags. But he was like having us fill the 2-liter plastic bags with gravel from the back alley and stacking it around the doors like that would have done anything. And so it was like that happened the day before the storm. And so end up what happened, the storm hits and it starts raining and everything. And I'm looking at reports online and things like that. And there's some streets that are flooded and things like that. And I'm in a very low car. So I called in and I told him, I was like, listen, I'm not coming in, especially it's supposed to keep raining. And if you remember Hurricane Harvey, it rained for 3 days. Like, it rained for a few days. And so I told him, like, the first day, I was like, listen, I'm not coming in. It's supposed to rain a few more days. And he's like, nah, like, yeah, it's a little flooded, but it's not that big of a deal. Like, I expect you to come in. I was like, nah, I'm calling in. And he's like, okay. So the second day comes in, like, it's even more flooded. Like, it's even more flooded. Everything's standing and everything. So I called him, and he's like, listen, I got people out there running in it right now. Like, there's no excuse. Like, you either come in, or I'm taking your name off the schedule. And I was like, well, you can take my name off the schedule. And that's how I left that job, man. But they were really tough, dude. Like, I even remember I only tried to take off one day off from them, and that was to move. I had to move from one place to the other, and they denied it. And it was, I remember asking them 3 weeks in advance and was like, hey, can I take this day off? And they were like, nope. They didn't even look. They were like, nope. They were like, it's football season. You need to be prepared. It's like, we have too many people. that are going to need pizza that day.
Yeah, it sounds like the guy was not a good leader and did not listen to other people. At the simple fact that the sheriff told him to close the doors, and he was like, "Nah, we're going to stay open." And it's like, man, like that is the sign of a good leader. If you are able to listen to other people, even your own team, who say, "Hey, like Johnny over there is way better at this. Maybe he should be on, you know, prep or whatever," and being like, "You know what? You're right." Like, and not having a big enough ego to where you're like, "No, I'm going to decide it." And then you're making the decision just to throw your weight around. That's not a good leader. Like, a good leader is collaborative and listens to his team. And so, yeah, that's what makes a good leader. And man, definitely toxic workplaces are for real. And sometimes everyone has hard things at their job and at their places. And so you got to determine, like, is this place toxic for me? Because what may be toxic for you isn't toxic for someone else. Someone else can maybe thrive in it. And so you got to ask yourself, like, if this is causing me to physically, emotionally, or mentally, like, take a toll on me, and it's not good for any of those, then you need to assess, like, hey, maybe I should find something else or take a break or whatever that is. And so I think that's kind of the, I don't know, would you agree? Or is that, you know, as we're wrapping up, is that the advice that you would give?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a lot like, man, it's weird because toxic workplaces are a lot like relationships. There's a lot of times where you have a lot of work put into it, and so you think to yourself, okay, maybe I should write it out and whatnot. But it's like, if you're not happy, you're not happy. And, you know, there's so many people. I've never really heard people who have left and went to another job, especially like Boot Corral being an example. I know a lot of people who are on the other side of Boot Corral that we work together, really cool people, but now they're doing other things. And they sit there and they think, oh my God, I'm so happy that I left, right? I'm so happy that I'm not there anymore. And again, we've talked about other people. There are other people that are still there, right? That have been there all this time. And I'm not saying that they're not happy people, but you never know. They might be so much happier. You know what I mean? I know a lot of other people, a lot of times it's just taking the jump. There's a lot of times it's just taking the jump. So.
Yep. And so we're not telling you to quit your job tomorrow. Definitely think about it, process it. If you feel like you need to take that step.
Make a plan. Make a plan. That's the biggest thing. The only time I ever jumped with my job was Boot Corral doing that. But again, it was, you know, that wasn't a career thing. And that wasn't something that was just like, oh man, I don't know what I'm going to do with my finances, right? So it's like, you always want to think about that sort of thing. But if you're unhappy, yeah, definitely take a look and try to see what opportunities are out there for sure.
So we've had a great episode talking about toxic workplaces. I'm sure maybe we can do another episode here in the future, but we're so glad that you guys joined us for the ride. Follow us on the Trash Can Network, the Aviator Society. If you love planes, all the good stuff. Anything else you got to add to that?
That's pretty much it, man. I mean, it's all fun stuff. You like planes and all that good jazz. We got daily flight tracks going on too. So if you ever like to track planes, I always like to put some on there that are like 12 hours plus. So it's always cool seeing that. I don't know. It's always interesting being at work or doing whatever and being like, oh man, this thing just took off and now it's halfway across the world. It's pretty interesting. So, but that's all I got, man.
Well, you know what's not toxic? The Starship. And the Starship is here to take us out. I'm Chris.
And I'm Micah.
And this has been the Donut Box Podcast.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found, too good to be true. Standing here beside you, want so much to give you. This love in my heart that I'm feeling for you.
Let them say we're crazy, I don't care about that. Put your hands in